Hey, conscious leaders, a warm welcome to yet another episode. Today I'm going to do something different. And I'm assuming you're getting used to this because every time I do something, it's different. And I'm trying my best to go with the flow. Today I'm going to have a discussion with one of the ladies that serves on our advisory board for conscious leaders. Now we've been working together, we know each other, we've become friends, but we don't really know her story. And it was her birthday in January, and I saw her sister, who I also know, commenting to say that she's come from a very difficult life, and that she's come through a lot of hard times. And we've never spoken about her story because it's a story is somebody's privilege, and they can tell their story when they feel safe. And I approached. Now you know who's going to be here, Michelle Israel. And I approached her and I asked her, are you comfortable now to tell your story so that you can actually bring it out in the air and just let it out? And she agreed. And today, without further ado, we've got Michelle Israel with us. Warm welcome.
Thanks, Coleman. Thanks for having me on the show.
I am very excited to have you because I have no idea where we're going. You know, it's fascinating. You and I can have such long conversations. Our WhatsApp messages is like 200 kilometers long. It's like, oh my gosh, going up and down. But I think, you know, you bring such a wonderful energy and you're just so full of life. But there's a story, and everybody has a story, and everybody has a story to tell. And don't try and put your story in a hierarchy, or my story is not as good as that person, or, you know, trying to say my story is better than somebody else's. Everybody has a story and it matters to them. So I want to thank you for today for actually showing up.
It's
I thought
pleasure.
You're not going to arrive. So I was like very happy to see you as I came out of the studio. So welcome.
Thank you.
You know, tell us a little bit about where you are now, what are you up to, and what are you doing? Because it's very important to know before we get into a story that we can see how the dots are connecting.
Yes, so I've been in corporate for 26 years of my life, and last year, November, my gut just said to me, it's time, Michelle, it's time, you know. I just had that constant gut chasing. I wasn't unhappy where I was. I absolutely love the people like family, and I had to take that bold step. And now I'm a mental health and well-being coach, and I help people and companies on different levels. And I'm absolutely loving it because I know that everything I've been through in my life has brought me to where I'm at now. And I think people won't understand it until they get there, you know, but it's to get there. So, I love what I do at the moment. I absolutely love this purpose, this God-given purpose that I've been given.
Fabulous. Sorry, I wanted to say fabulous. Okay, so let's go back in time and let's go back to little Michelle. You and I are firm believers of the inner child.
Yes.
And what those dreams were when you were younger. Tell me about your dreams as a child and what it was like growing up as a little Michelle.
Yeah. So I come from a very rich family. We were quite rich. And my dad passed when I was 4. I don't recall a lot of memories for him, of him, but I worked on a very deep level as I grew older. And I've done different types of medicines, and I've been on different journeys where I was able to connect with him again. So I'll tell you more about that as we go. I've got a sister, so we were 2. And my mom remarried when my dad passed. She remarried shortly after. But we also came out of a very strict household, like the type of household that you'll just get that look and then you know, oh, yes, you know.
Yes.
And saying that we grew up in a strict household doesn't mean like that I feel sorry that we did, because it, you know, it was okay for me to grow up in a very strict household. But as soon as my mom remarried, things changed for us. There was a lot of violence in the house, a lot of domestic violence in the house. And it's kind of like my mom had to choose between her children and her husband. And eventually she obviously chose her husband. And yeah, as I said, there was a lot of domestic violence. There was a lot of cases of molesting.
Wow.
Yeah, we had cases of rape as well as we grew up, you know, in this type of environment. My mom was a businesswoman and she was never home. So we had the money, but we didn't have that emotional connection. And things just got really, really rough. And, you know, I remember the times that we had to sit with black bags outside the street. They were like, here's your stuff. You need to go. And, you know, my sister and I will always look at each other and it's like, where are we going to go? And it's like happened multiple times where we, you know, we were sitting on the street and we're like, okay, well, where do we have to go now? And my sister eventually left home when I was 15. She decided, you know, she was told to leave the home. And at the age of 16, the violence just got a little bit worse in the house. Mm. And eventually I also couldn't take it anymore. So I spoke to a friend of mine that was at school with me, and her parents said that they will gladly take me in. And in this time, I had a security issue because I didn't feel safe. I had an anxiousness about me. I was permanently anxious because things wasn't handled, I would say, through love. There was always shouting and why this and why that. You know, I didn't know the difference between a loving environment and an anxious environment. So I was permanently anxious. And by the age of 16, I've decided myself that I was going to leave. Like, I couldn't take this violence anymore. I couldn't take the screaming and the shouting. And, yeah, there's always two sides to a story. I mean, I was a child. I mean, I was naughty. But I think there's ways and means how to handle a child when they go through that period. My sisters left home. I was on my own. And I had to fight for myself and my mom in this environment. And sure. Yeah, eventually at school, a very good friend of mine at the time said, I've spoken to my parents. We've got a spare caravan and you can come and stay in the caravan. So at the age of 16, I packed up my stuff. I left and I lived in a caravan for a year. And from there, these people bought a home and they gave me a room to live in until... Can I say standard 9? Where am I at? Like, I don't
yeah, standard 9 it is. Standard 9, you are 17, right?
Yes, 17. You know, and even at the age of 17, I haven't really dealt with what has happened, you know? What is love? And also, I was very scared of men because of what happened to me. I was scared of men, like I couldn't accept a boyfriend or, you know, get close to them because I would always be scared that they would hurt me. And I guess I didn't know what it was like to feel love in a relationship, to feel love from a father, to feel love from a mother. All I basically had was my sister and the parents that took me into their caravan, and eventually we lived into, they bought a home for me to live in. And then at the age of 17, my sister and I realized that my dad has left us a lot of money when he passed.
Sure.
There was a trust. And we obviously went for help. We went to a lawyer and we realized that millions of rands were taken from us. And my mom was the executor of the trust. And unfortunately, by the time we've reached the trust, there was almost nothing left. So the money was spent during the years, and eventually it was from rags to riches, from riches to rags. And then we took my mother to court. We sued her in the High Supreme Court of Pretoria. I was 16. I had to go to be declared as a major in Pretoria to be able to sue, because you can only sue someone when you are 18 years old. So I had to go through the test at Pretoria High Court, and I had to be declared as a major. And then eventually, as I was declared as a major at 17, we went ahead and we sued. And for 5 years we sued. But in the meanwhile, it's actually so profound that I've met somebody in matric, and he was in the flying squad. And already I've attracted somebody that had to be that protection. Like, I wanted to feel protected because I was always anxious and scared of my surroundings or what would happen to me. And we dated for a very long time. And I had a little boy. His name is Michael in this time. And the day Michael was born, I said, no more. I don't care about money. I'm not going to fight anymore. To me, it is what it is. And we've let that go. And however, my child has showed me what real love is, what motherhood could look like. And it was always my number one to give him what I never had, you know, that type of love and that type of affection, and to protect him. And even though I have attracted the wrong men, I was always looking for my father, you know. And, did I kiss a few frogs in my life.
Wow.
So it was either to fix them, or it was the bad boy type of guy I was looking for, you know, the superbike guy, you know, because that was my father. Like, I had always attracted men like him in my life. And finally, you know, I got engaged with a guy. I've given up everything, and I've moved in with him. And again, there was a lot of screaming and shouting. And
eventually,
I said, you know what, I had enough of this. I packed my stuff. I left everything I worked for behind, and I ended up on the streets. And I'm like, wow, Michelle, like, could you have not strategized this better?
And also, how old was your son at this point in time?
So my son was in primary school at the time, and he went to his dad every second weekend. But in that time, I went to him. You know, luckily we've grown to have a relationship because of Michael. And he said, look, sort out your stuff. I'll look after Michael for a while. And I was devastated because it's like giving your son away. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, what now? Because of the choices that you've made, now I have to. It felt like I gave him away, even though I knew I didn't.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to work through that. And final straw, I was on the streets again with my stuff in black bags. And for two nights, I slept in front of a gym. And I'm like, where am I going to go? Like, I've left everything behind. I'm just going to be in my car. And a friend of mine had a hair extension factory, and I spoke to her, and she's like, no, Michelle, you can't do this. Come and live in the factory for a while. And there I was for 8 months of my life. I guess that was a time where I was like, this is enough. I've had enough. I've got my child, but I had to give him away. My sister took off far away from me. I had no one. And I had no one to pick me up. I had no one to say, well, this is your next move, or this is what you can do. Huh. And I've been there for 8 months. And while I was there, I was always a hustler with work. Like, I always will make a plan. I'm always a plan maker when things doesn't go well. And I was a personal trainer at the time. I was up at 3, working very long hours, trying to get myself back on my feet. However, that was the rock bottom period of my life. It was just, I actually was in that 8 months wanting to end my life. It was just, it was enough. It was, you know, if I have to tell my story in detail, we'll probably sit here for weeks, but I kept finding myself in anxious environments. You know, I kept finding myself making the wrong decisions. I kept finding myself studying and doing things to make other people feel better. I kept choosing the wrong relationships. And I always used to say, what is wrong with you? Or what is wrong with your company? You know? And in the meantime, it was everything about me. Mm. And, you know, we are very quickly to blame our parents to say, you did this and you did that. However, as I went through my journey, I've realized that they only did the best that they could at that time. That's how they've learned. Mm. So I guess we raise our children the way we get taught, you know, for another generation to another generation. However, for me is I had to break that curse. To me, it was like a curse. Like, I didn't want to be like that. I didn't want to be that mother. And in that 8 months, I went to see an NLP coach, which I had no clue what NLP was. But he's like, come, Michelle, let's try some NLP on you. And
if I may say, that's very advanced because, I mean, I've never heard of an NLP coach until recently. Yes. So when was this now?
Yeah, so this was in the 8 months that I lived in the factory. This man just stumbled across my path and he's like, and I'm like, well, what's NLP? He's like, just come for the session. So, yes, I went for the session. And even in this time, I was a very well-known fitness model. And even in my fitness modeling years, I wasn't happy. But I realized that never good enough, Michelle. You're never good enough. And I was very unhappy. And my fitness modeling years was great years, but I wasn't good enough for myself. Mm. And the more I said, you know, got on stage, the more I wasn't good enough. So I just wanted more, and I wanted people to accept me because I was never good enough for myself. I was never good enough in my family environment. I had a big career in fitness modeling as well, but again, you know, going through the process of healing, I think is the biggest part of my story, was to accept that this has happened to me. And what are you going to do about it? You're going to feel sorry for yourself. You're going to play the victim. You're going to tell people, oh, this happened to me and that happened and I lost this. And people must be there to support you. But eventually, you need to make that decision for yourself. And I think it was up until the time where I wanted to take my own life, where I was rock bottom, that I thought there must be more to life than this. Like, there must be more than just being anxious and having pain. And I can tell you my anxiousness was so severe. It's actually a funny story if I tell it now, but I'll drive on the highway and I'll get an anxiety attack. But at that time, I didn't know what an anxiety attack is. So it felt like I was getting a heart attack. Mm. And I was hyperventilating. And, you know, I'd stop on the side of the road and phone the ambulance. And I'm like, I'm getting a heart attack, guys. Like, you need to come. And I'll leave my car there. The ambulance will fetch me. And the next morning, they'll say, oh, Miss Israel, you're fine. You just had an anxiety attack.
And I like that they say it is just an anxiety attack. It is horrible.
Yeah, and this happened to me multiple times. And I was on hardcore medication because of anxiety. Mm. And going through NLP made me realize that I could reprogram my brain. It doesn't matter what has happened to me. But before I can, you can't just reprogram your brain. You need to go through healing. So that same friend taught me about a medicine called ayahuasca.
Oh, here it comes, the ayahuasca. I've had a conversation around this topic. Okay, so before we get into the ayahuasca journey, I want to just talk and just process everything that you've just mentioned. I mean, first of all, I just want to say, wow, this is the thing. We hang around with people, we don't have any clue of what people have gone through. The guilt, the shame, the anger, the resentment, the disappointment, the need, the lack of love. All of those emotions so deeply stored within the core of your soul. And when I listen to your story, and I'm just like, for such a young little girl to, you first of all, lose your father, the hero in your life, and then going through the process that you've gone with your mother and the stepfather, you know, it reminds me a lot of my mother's story. And I think, you know, I've briefly touched on that, which I don't want to go into detail about, but it really shook me up. Just my mom never managed to heal from her story, and it always came out in her actions. And she was very risk averse, very strict. And it's because trying to protect and trying to make sure this thing doesn't happen, but it doesn't matter how you try and protect, it's actually going to happen.
Yeah.
Because the more you fear, the more you actually bring it to life. And listening to your story, did you find that growing up that there was very little that you could remember about your life? Tell me about, you know, being 16 or 17. Did you really process everything? What was your view of that? Or was it just about focusing on where's my next move?
Mm.
What type of emotions as a child do you think has surfaced also in you as an adult?
So there's a lot of emotions that I had to face head on. The type of emotions I had, or the type of things that I went through, is I didn't process it at the age of 16, because now I was on my own.
Mm.
I didn't process it on the age of 17, neither 18, neither 21, because at 21 I had my boy and now I had to be a mother.
Mm.
So I was constantly anxious, scared. I was on fight or flight, you know, constantly feeling that somebody's going to hurt me. Like,
sure.
I realized when I went for these sessions that I haven't processed anything what happened. Mm. I didn't have time to think, because everything also happened so quickly, and you know, some days were violent, and how do you process that as a child? You just like fight or flight, you know, go to school, do your work, you know. And I didn't process anything as a child. I think it took me up until then where it was like, okay, Michelle, now you need to really sort out your shit. Because I asked myself, is this what life is about? Like, is life about the suffering? Like, I just couldn't suffer like that anymore. I just had enough. I was at breaking point that time.
Did you ever think, you know, if only my mother didn't do the irresponsible thing, and if only, you know, that life could have be different. Have you ever thought about, you know, what that life could have looked like? Do you dwell there?
Yeah, I used to dwell there. I don't dwell there anymore. Because, number one, I don't know what a mother's love is. I don't know what that is. And to me, I had to go and, number one, forgive her. And I had to accept that I will never have that type of love. And, you know, there was times we tried to connect again, but things will happen in the house when I would go back and say I would go try back, and I'm like, I don't feel safe. Like, I don't feel safe being here.
Mm.
And that's the thing for me, is my love to my child is a mother's love. That's a mother's love for me, because I don't know what it is. And I mean, even now at the age of 45, I would never know what that is. I never had that type of love. And it's the same with the father's love. I don't know what that is. I will never have that love from my real father. However, I know I couldn't choose my family, but I can now choose who I want in my life as a father figure. I can now choose who I want in my life as a mother figure. And I've got many father figures, and I've got many mother figures, and I had to accept that. I don't walk around thinking, oh, but it's not. To me, they're real.
Mm.
They're not blood, but they are my family.
You know, I love it what you're saying, because, you know, there's such a messed up view sometimes from people that actually are privileged enough to come out of a loving home, and feel that people that don't come out of a loving home, or that comes out of dysfunctional family, that they are actually messed up and life is messed up. And it's, you know, I once had a conversation, maybe to give context, I once had a conversation with somebody about that, and it was like, you know, when you hire somebody, you look at somebody that comes out of a very healthy family and all of that. And for me, that's wrong, because I feel that people that come out of difficult situations like this are far more resilient.
Yes.
Because they have nothing to compare it to, right? I mean, if I listen to your story, and this is why perspectives are so important, we're so easy to judge people based on what we know. And if it's something that's outside of our comfort zone, we tend to go, oh my gosh, that doesn't feel safe, or maybe that isn't. But I think that there's so much power, and I've experienced this in my personal life, there's so much power in cutting off cords with people that no longer serve you, whether it's family or friends. Making those hard decisions is the inner revolution of you. It is where you can actually free yourself of the entanglements and the detachment of energy that no longer serves you. And the moment you do that, something profound happens. Tell me about your perspective on the view of the world, and also the view of how you see it from your life perspective.
Yeah, so it's exactly like you said, like, I thought by myself that I was going to be a washout. I thought to myself, I'm coming from a dysfunctional family. Maybe I'm supposed to be a washout. Maybe I should get into hectic stuff, you know? Because I look at a lot of people that comes from that background, and, you know, it's very difficult to change around. And I was involved in hectic stuff in my life. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I'm not going to flower stuff and say, oh, I'm this angel. No, I wasn't. I was involved in drugs. I was involved with the wrong men. I made the wrong choices. And I think it was also just a journey to get where I needed to get. And it was that flipping point, rock bottom on the floor, saying, okay, Misha, are you going to take your life now, or are you actually going to do something about it? Because nobody cares. Mm. Nobody's going to come and save you. And nobody did. Like, people were hatful of my life, kind of.
Wow.
Like, oh, she's again in the street. And, oh, she, you know, people get hatful eventually. It's like, okay, I realize nobody's going to come and get me. Nobody's going to come and help me. So I'm either going to get up and help myself, or do what I want to do, you know, to just to take my life.
I want to touch on this because it's very profound. You know, we see the conversations going around a lot, talking about the importance of mentorship, the importance of coaching. But hearing what you're saying is actually like this big dagger that's just going through my heart. It's actually heartbreaking, is that we choose to mentor people, and I'm going to try and say this in the right way. We choose to mentor people that we feel we can almost put our stamp of approval on and say, I helped you to get there.
Mm.
But do we mentor people that we see are going through a tremendous hard time, that don't see their own potential? Are we actually looking beyond the norm and looking beyond all the opportunity of, and there's this, and I don't want to dwell on what that would look like, but I sometimes feel that the mentoring process or the coaching process can also be a very selfish process, where it's, I want to do something because it makes me feel good.
Yes.
I don't want to mentor you. I don't want to coach you. I don't want to be there for you because I'm actually embarrassed by you. Or, hey, I actually don't understand your story, and I think I don't believe in you, so I don't feel like I can make a difference. Where that's actually the time when you need to reach out and to actually be there for that person.
Yeah.
And thank you for this breakthrough, because it really, as you were talking about this, I'm going, oh my word. It's so often when we reach out to people and we want to mentor them or we coach them, it's people that we think, okay, let me take you a level higher. Where a level higher is taking you out of the gutter.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Or just giving that person a simple smile.
A simple smile or recognition, yes. I see you.
Yes.
You know, it's that movie of Avatar where when they, and also how we, well, not how we, but I mean how the African tribes greet when they say Sawubona, and it means I see you. And in Avatar, they also have this way of greeting each other to say I see you. And just being accepted and nourished. And yet again, nobody knew your story and where things actually, you know, not having anyone to turn to apart from your sister.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, and, you know, I think of it now and I feel so strong to talk about it. But usually when I talk about it, I would like break down and cry because it really hurts. You know, it really did hurt. And it took a lot of healing for me. Also, I don't know if you know, from the ages from 0 to 7, you know, a child's like a recording button.
Yep.
Well, however you act, whatever you say, whatever they see, whatever they feel, that becomes their programming. So, you know, and that has become my programming. I was this anxious, fight or flight. I was forever in trouble, you know. It was just very tough.
Gosh.
It was very tough.
What did you learn about yourself?
So I've learned that it doesn't matter how tough things are, like, you can push through. And I think that rock bottom is the one that showed me, like, you can sleep on a mattress, but you can still pull through. You can still be strong for yourself, not for others, not for family, not for friends, but at the end of the day, if you don't look after yourself mentally, then there's nothing. Like, I don't care what people tell me. You know, people are like, yo, I care about this one and this one must come first. And yes, you know, religion is something else when they say God comes first. But the thing is, if you don't do the mental work every day on yourself, then what are you going to produce for other people? What are you going to be like for other people? You know, and it was really tough for me to go back in time and say, who am I? Am I the fixer? Because that's eventually what I was. I used to attract people in my life to try and fix them. And I studied, beauty therapy because I wanted to fix people. And
sure.
I always wanted to see people walking out with a smile saying, okay, I fixed the toenail, they feel happy now. You know, or I fix the skin and they're happy now. So I always was busy fixing people.
It's like putting the plaster over all of the visible things. But in the end of the day, there's something deeply rooted in that.
Yeah, I had to fix myself. You know, when I studied NLP, I realized that, you know, life is like a mirror. It reflects.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a reflection of me saying, hey, Michelle, you need to work on yourself. Stop helping other people, you know. Start helping yourself. And, you know, the thing is also, if we don't deal with these things, there's many people that, like, you know, when I speak to clients, I'm like, are you ready to go back to your childhood?
Yeah.
And they're like, hell no. And I'm like, well, then we're not going to go there. But, you know, I believe it's necessary to really go there and to clean out and to forgive. And my life has changed. Like, it's completely changed. Like, you know, even when I talk about it, it's profoundly changed with my healing journey. I obviously don't have a relationship with my mother because I choose for myself.
And you're entitled to.
Yes, I choose that for myself. And we don't have a bad relationship, and I still contribute towards her the way I want to contribute to make sure that she's looked after. But that is a choice that I made. And, you know, people say, oh, how can you do that? That's the choice that I made, and I'm happy with that. I'm satisfied with that. Because I also know in my heart that I've tried everything to fix things, and nothing I did fixed anything. The thing is also, I've learned that you can't change people. You can't make them love you the way you want to be loved.
Yeah.
You cannot change it, but you can change yourself to accept it.
Yeah. You know, it's so profound. Like, I mean, you're also an empath, so, you know, you also feel energy, you feel people's emotions, sometimes more than people can understand.
Mm.
And you know, that first 7 years of our lives, as you said, is so vital, and it's where our personalities are shaped.
Yes.
And it is truly about finding that authentic power within yourself, where the true personality of really who you are meets with your soul purpose. And we as empaths, so many times, especially in our younger years, we absorb all the risk. We take in everything. And we're always pleasing everybody, making sure everybody is happy around us and doing as we're told and how we need to do things. Yes. Because we're trying to minimize the risk. As long as you're okay, I'm okay. Yes. You're okay, I'm okay. But there comes a time in our lives where it's no longer about that. It is now stepping into the path of my authentic power, my authentic way of living, and what feels right to me. And when I listen to your story and this gradual progress of it just getting, you know, you feel like, oh my gosh, when you listen to your story, okay, this is where it's going to end. Oh, but there's another layer. Yes. At some point, it just goes, boom. As you said, you fell on your knees and you said, I don't want to live this life anymore. Went into the depth of your soul. But then you go onto your holy grail.
Mm.
And this holy grail is about, who am I? Mm. What am I all about? Now that I know who I am, how do I integrate into the world? And having that confidence and assurance to say, this is who I am.
Yes.
Step aside, people. I'm coming, right? Talk me through the holy grail of your life. And, you know, once you've turned your life around, knowing that you had to go into your childhood to go and fix the pain and the hurt, how has this changed you? Because you're talking about ayahuasca, the exploring, experimenting and growing and outgrowing people and growing your circles into new flourishing relationships. Talk me about what that was for you and where it took you up to now.
Yes, so this teacher that helped me, that gave me NLP sessions, he said to me, I know a guy that, you know, has these ceremonies and he could help you to heal. And, you know, at that time I was so desperate. I'm like, I will do anything. I just don't want to feel this pain, this heaviness, this anxiety. Like, I've had enough.
Mm.
And I went for my first session and they offered three little tots, like tequila tots of ayahuasca. And they said, you only have to have one, but, you know, here I come. I'm like, oh, damn, give me all three. Let's go. I was so desperate.
Oh, I hope you ate right for that ceremony.
Oh, my word. The first thing I remember is it took me back on a seesaw with my dad. I was with my dad, and I saw my dad, like, kind of like for the first time since the age of four. And
wow.
Yeah, it was so traumatic to see him. Like, I was happy but sad to see him. And him and I were on a seesaw. And he dropped me off the seesaw and we walked away. And I cried. I looked at him as like, don't leave me. Why are you leaving me? And that's where everything started for me. So the medicine takes you right back into your childhood and it puts you through the situations that you've been through already. There's some of the stuff I've been through that I don't remember.
Wow.
It took me right back in time. And with everything that you go through back in time, it's like you're in it already. That's like people say, you have to be ready when you're ready to go back in your past, because you feel the pain. You feel the crying, you feel the anxiety, the tears, and you can't get out of that situation. You have to be in it and you have to go with it. So I went for a lot of ayahuasca sessions and the after effects for me was a cry for days. Like, I just cried. I don't know why I cried. I was just so emotional. Like, you know, and I used to say to the guy that gave the sessions, I'm like, dude, I can't stop crying. And he's like, it's your healing time. And I'm like, well, I can't see through my eyes.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's a process. And I think after my sixth session, my life changed so much. I just saw life through another lens. I felt lighter because, you know, not only did I forgive my mother, but I forgave the men that did harm to me when I was a little girl. Like, I also had to go through that process. And there was a lot of forgiving. But you know, it's one thing to forgive somebody, but it's another to truly forgive them. And I always say to people, you'll know when you've forgiven somebody or something. And yeah, it was a very big process for me to go through. I landed such an amazing job. After my fourth, fifth session, I got an amazing job. I got a beautiful home for my son and me. However, not everything was fixed. I still kissed frogs, you know. So I think it kind of like established me back to what I felt like I deserved: a mom, a home, a son. And I just kept on attracting frogs. And I'm like, right. I'm like, okay, Michelle, now we've got to do some more work, you know. The thing is, just inner work never stops, especially when you have so much that happened to you in your past. Like, it never stops. And you sometimes, still today, I catch myself when I'm, you know, unconscious, and I'm like, why are you thinking that? I'm like, oh, okay, but this has happened in your past. So I have to catch myself doing something, and I'm like, why are you doing this? And it still comes back. Do you know what I'm saying? It's not simsalabim.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we have to constantly work on ourselves. But coming back to kissing the frogs, I hope there's nobody watching that.
Nobody's watching, right?
I also had to do deep work by, why am I attracting my dad? Why am I attracting the bad boys? Why do I want to fix guys, you know? One guy will phone me and say, I want to come visit you, but I don't have tollgate money, you know, and I'd be okay with that. And I mean, you know, and I'm like, how much longer are you going to tolerate these types of relationships, Michelle? And again, I went back and I did some deep work. And yeah, it doesn't happen overnight. It's a journey that you have to walk on. And I must say, you know, by working through that, by choosing that I want to change, by breaking that pattern, you know, I always just think, oh, why is people coming? People are so wrong coming into my life. It was me. I was attracting that. I was like a magnet. I think they smelled me even coming into the room, you know. It was like, woo.
You're the fixer.
Yeah. And I said to myself, I don't want this type of men in my life anymore. And I had to change that for myself. It wasn't their fault. It was my fault because I attracted it in my life. And I must say now, my prince and I crossed paths when I was the age of 40, and I've been with him for 7 years, and I know what the love of my life looks like, feels like.
I love that.
And it's just so profound to know that I was in this abusive environment with me, and narcissistic environments, and you know, it was just different types of environments of the same person, just in different skin. You know, just disguised in a, but it's the same type of men I used to attract, but they're disguised in different skin.
Same storyline, different character.
Yes.
Or different,
Yeah, you know, you always ends up the same story. And I'm like, really? Again? You know, and again, I had to make that decision for myself, like, is this what you want for your life? You know, is this what you want for your son's life? Hell no. And I had to go and change it for myself. But again, like, you know, when I say to people I had to change it for myself, they think it's one session. Or they think it's like, ugh.
Oh, no.
You know, it's deep work. And I must say, with the deep work that I've done, I'm no longer on anxiety medication because I knew where it came from and I can navigate that now. You know? And yes, am I fearless? I used to be so scared. I'm so fearless.
Oh, I'm celebrating. Yeah. Woman, I'm so excited for you.
Yeah.
Listen, I have to tell you, since the day I've met you, I've just loved your energy around me. I mean, you and I can have conversations and also laugh a lot and you know, not taking ourselves so seriously. And I think, you know, it's this inside-out revolution. your past does not define who you are.
I agree.
And whatever you've gone through, you can work through that and pick up the pieces and look at who you are. You're a formidable force. I mean, even in conscious leaders and the guidance that I get from you, and you're always the person that comes on. I've got this idea. Why don't you do this? Have you tried thinking about this thing? I've already organized that, by the way. Why don't you try and do this, etc.? And you know, you're so quick to think on your feet, and you're so solution driven. Nobody can get in your way. I remember the day my husband and I were going to Durban, and you said, "Oh no, I can get you. I want to get you sponsored for this thing or that thing." The next week when we got home, there was a package waiting. Oh no, I've already organized it.
Yeah.
I was like, this woman is a hustler, like seriously. But I think when I look at you, is, you know, maybe you can tell the audience also this beautiful relationship that started forming between you and your son, and you know how the journey that you're currently walking on. So maybe take us through that as well.
Yeah, so my son also grew up, you know, in a broken home. I mean, his dad and I were together for about 8-9 years. And yeah, he got exposed to dating somebody else, and I got exposed to dating somebody else. But I always tried to protect him. Like, I always tried, when I dated, not to see that person when he was with me, and rather to see that person every second weekend. You know what I'm saying? I think my sister, well, not I think, I know my sister was and is the most amazing auntie. I think without her, I wouldn't have been able to raise the boy that we have today. Yeah, no, she is an auntie 100 for him. And our relationship is so good. You know, we are able to speak openly to each other of what has happened. And he'd also always say to me, "Mom, you know, emotional-wise, you weren't really there for me, but I was a single mom, and I had to pay the bills at the end of the day. No one paid the bills for me. I didn't have help from his dad to pay the bills. I had to pay the bills. I had to. And, you know, I had to explain to him, I'm like, 'My boy, do you know how much I love you? But your mother had to work her ass off. Not one job, not two, but three.' And I promise you, the day he wrote matric, boy, did I have a fat glass of wine. And I'm like, 'You know what?' And I'm like, 'We did it.' And he's like, 'Mom, we did it.' And I'm like, 'We did it.' So, you know, even though his father didn't help financial-wise, he did help but for him living there in the times and supporting him. But we've got such a special relationship now. Like, we are almost like a brother and sister type of relationship. He's so open. He can speak to me about anything.
Oh, I love that.
And he's so successful, you know. So I look at the traits, I'm thinking to myself, maybe I gave him what I battled with, you know. Maybe I gave him anxiety, maybe, you know. And, you know, I look at him and I feel so blessed. And, you know, I thank God every day for that boy, because he's an amazing, he's a remarkable young man. Like, I think that will bring tears to my eyes. Yeah. Anyway.
You know, listening to everything that you've shared with us, I want us to reflect just a moment for the audience, for women going through difficult times. And I think that the whole idea of you can get through it, you can change your story, change the script.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be that script anymore. But the importance of taking care of your emotional intelligence, one. And the other thing that I really feel that also is important, the support structure that you build around you when you are going through a very fragile emotional environment. What would your recommendation be based on where you are now?
Yeah, I think also the coaching that I do now is – it's not only because I studied NLP and I studied my master's and all of that. I think it's everything that I've been through in life helps me to dance in the moment with a client. Like, I kind of feel that pain, the pain that they have. You know, I know what abuse feels like. I know what sexual abuse feels like. I know what, You know, there's so many things. I know what brutal hijacking feels like. Sure. You know, things that we haven't even touched on today. So I think I had to go through those things in order to be who I am and what I am today in order to help people. But, you know, if somebody is in that, you know, in that situation, you know, I would say number one is who can I turn to, who can I go to for help? Because as we know, the suicidal rates is sky high, you know, and you know, there isn't even a question anymore. If you won't even know, you know, if somebody's going to do it now or not. I mean, sometimes you don't even see the signs.
Yeah.
And, you know, for that person that's rock bottom, like, your life can change. Like, your life can change. There is help out there. There's so much help out there. And just to surround yourself with the people that will uplift you, you know, that will listen to you. You know, and sometimes people think it's always money. Help me. Like, it's not always money. You know, it's I think the biggest gift, and I always say that you can give somebody is your support and your attention, because people are really needing that in today's life.
What I loved about your choice of words is upliftment versus encouragement.
Yes.
Because upliftment is really truly helping you out of a situation, whereas encouragement is more of a mindset.
Yes.
And where uplifting is really taking somebody by the hand and walking a path with them.
Yes.
And I think that if you recognize people that are going through a difficult time, have the courage to reach out.
Absolutely.
And just to walk a path with them. And if you are not capable of walking that path with them, find them help. As you mentioned, there are so many places where people can go to find help. I want to ask you, you know, now that you are doing what you're doing, you are adamant, this is who I am. I want to help people with mental health issues. I want to help people that have come from traumatic environments to discover their full potential and to take control of their lives. Because if you can do it, anybody else can do it. And that's what I love about your story. It's like the heroine story. It's like you can be the change that you want to see in the world. And the change always starts with you.
Yes.
And now you are using your story to change lives. What have you learned now that you are fully embedded in your purpose story and living your authentic path?
Yes, I think not to waste time, to really, you know, work on yourself to get there. You know, I wish I realized my authentic self when I was much younger. I'm not saying I'm old, but...
Oh, no, you're old, you're saying I'm old. Same age.
I just wish I could have done the inner work for myself sooner. I would have done inner work for myself sooner. I would have put myself first sooner, you know. And I know it's never too late. Like, that's something that I taught myself. It's never too late. And, you know, I'm starting to walk a new path now. So I'm back into unknown territory. And I'm like, okay, Michelle, you're here now. But now we're in unknown again. So I'm a young entrepreneur. And, you know, it's something new for me to learn. But I wouldn't have been a young entrepreneur if I didn't work on the things that I had to work to get to this point. And, you know, I don't think anybody will ever be 100% true to themselves. 100%. I don't think there is such thing as 100%. Mm. But they have to do the daily work to recognize, where can I improve? What can I make better? And, yeah, I journal every day. Like, I know I'm not going to be perfect, and I know this could be the beginning for me. Like, I don't know. I might sit in Hollywood next week on a stage. You know what I'm saying?
I know is I'm your numbers. Listen, okay, because I am a numerologist. Just want to say to you that in your numbers, you do have motivational speaking, and, you know, presenting and teaching and educating and uplifting people, and also the thinker and the leader. So I do think that this story is something that I know that will bring that will bring so much inspiration.
Mm.
But I feel there's so many people that need to also, you know, you tell your story so courageously, like, this is who I am, this is where I came from, this is what I did, where a lot of people carry that shame. And I feel that shame holds you back.
Absolutely.
So much. There's so many times, for example, in my life, holding back who I really am because I'm trying to make sure everybody around me is comfortable. You know how hard that is?
Yes.
And then when you do realize, you know what, I'm not going to dim my light. I know that this is who I was and this is who I am now. Or there's shame that you carried with you, and we all have some shape or form of that shame. When you liberate it from it, it is where you really just come to a place of like, this is who I am, here I am, I'm showing up world. And what's also important about that journey is that there's a lot of people that's going to fall on the sidelines.
Yeah.
It's a form of integration and calibrating and outgrowing people that have held you back, because sometimes you have been around people that have seen you gone through the worst and weren't there for you.
Yes.
And now you're going to the best version of yourself. They can't come with you either.
Yes. I also remember at school I was bullied quite a lot.
Sure.
It was quite a big thing to be bullied. I think it is a big thing to be bullied. And I also didn't know how to forgive those people, you know. And I wasn't a pretty girl at school. Like, I'll show you my photos, I'm being honest. Like, I was the ugly duckling. And
don't say that about yourself.
But that is truly who I was. And I was bullied throughout my years of school. And I don't know, I made a turn and, you know, I'm obviously looking after myself and stuff. And it's so amazing because those bullies that bullied me are asking me for help today. And I don't go, oh, no, you bullied me. You know, I come from a place of love. And, you know, people sometimes do things to us that they don't even know what they're doing. You know, they only know how to do that. And I think that's something that made me so strong in life, because once you can understand that, once you can understand that I was bullied, yes, it doesn't give any people right to do that. But if you can understand that, the bullying was everything to do with them and nothing to do with you.
I was just about to say, yeah.
Being like, oh, I actually feel a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
Because of that, you know?
You know, one of my friends, Kalnisha, she said something so profound to me the other day when we were talking on the phone. She said to me, there was one of their friends, the child got bullied and... I'm going to start again. So one of my friends, Kalnisha, she mentioned the teacher of her children's school was giving a class and talking about bullying. And she said that apparently the conversation that came out is all of us will come across a bully in our lifetime,
yes,
whether we're young or older. It's the people that never complain about being bullied,
yes,
that are the bullies.
Yes.
Hey?
Yeah.
How profound is that?
Yeah, no, that's insane.
I was just like, my goodness, yeah, that is a interesting thing. And you know, you see it also in the corporate ladder.
Mm-hmm.
You see the corporate bullies.
Yes.
And what a lot of people have to go through. And, you know, apart from life situations, there's so much trauma that sits also with broken people sitting in our political systems, broken people sitting in organizations, leading massive teams. And not going through that creative illness, that dark night of the soul,
yes,
and to do the healing. And the thing is that you can do things in adulthood just as much as you can do in childhood. You can destroy a person's life,
yes,
through corporate bullying and not knowing and recognizing that that's what you do. I must tell you, like, there's something that makes my blood boil. It's corporate bullies and seeing how they get away with this psychopathic, narcissistic behavior and the band-aid approach of let's not talk about it, here's a package or here's this, but let's not talk about it, and it's infuriating. And I love that we're living in a time and an era where we are seeing whistleblowers, where,
yes,
it's actually becoming legislation that is in labor law I think it's in South Africa as well, where there is a section for corporate whistleblowing, where you can actually say when there's things going wrong in organizations like corporate bullying, that you can you can deal with it, and that this person can be taken to task. So your bullying is a very deep thing, and it has such a big impact on people's lives, and we can never minimize it. But it also tests you.
Yeah.
And also to know what you will stand for and won't stand for.
Yes.
And the value systems, right?
Yes.
That inventory of that value systems that is so paramount for you to really catapult yourself into your life. And so many times, like as you said earlier on, you know, we attract things in our lives because we don't, especially us as empaths, we have to learn the rule of boundaries.
Yes.
And we have to learn the rule of my value system. Not your value system. You teach me this or that thing, and then you wake up one day and you go, why do I believe this?
Yes.
Why am I doing this? Sorry, where did this come from? Yeah. And you completely have to rebuild and renovate the foundations of you and who you are.
Yes. Yo, I always say to people, like, do you brush your teeth every morning? And they're like, yes. I'm like, well, I hope some people brush their teeth every morning. but just like you have to get up and you brush your teeth, you have to put the work in for your soul and for your mind.
Yeah,
it's a daily thing. It's a deep, daily, everyday thing to get to know yourself better, to know who you are, and only when you know the real you will you attract whatever else needs to come into your life. It doesn't work the other way around.
Mm.
It's only when you truly know who you are that you'll be happy. And I must tell you, Combs, I'm so happy. Like, there's times where I feel, is this normal? Because, I was always in the anxiety environment. And now I don't have that anymore. And, you know, sometimes I still sit back and I think, something's wrong, because there isn't drama or anxiety or, it's not.
Yeah, where's all the drama? Yeah.
And I feel bad, exactly. And I'm like, why is nothing going on? And I'm like, well, that's the life that you chose for yourself. You know, embrace it, take it in, because you don't have to be scared anymore. You don't have to not have confidence anymore. And you're safe. You are safe. And, yeah.
Love it.
That's where I'm at now.
Love it. I want to thank you for sharing your story and for being so open and vulnerable. You know, I'm amazed every time. I'm nervous when I sit on this side, because I sometimes all I can do is just listen and be an active listener. And I think that these stories are important, because this is your sister, this is your mother, this could be your aunt. These stories run through generations.
Yes.
And we haven't spoken about them. And bringing them to the light is bringing the healing that needs to happen. And it brings the understanding to the younger generation. And I feel that we, in the generation, everybody's looking up to us now. Like, we are now going to lead the next generation in the age bracket, moving into our 50s.
Yes.
We are the next generation to lead the younger generation. And I often think about, this is an important stage, but we can't do it without understanding the elder generation and the wisdom who they've handed the baton over to us. What did they learn? But also with the younger generation is, don't wait until your life falls apart to do the work.
Yes.
I think that is something that I really trying to understand a lot better in my life. Is, you know how I am. I go into rabbit holes when something's happening to me. I really want to understand what's going on.
Yes.
And my Alice in Wonderland moment right now is, I know that Carl Jung said the first 40 years of our life is research, and then the years after that is implementation of that research. But for me, it's like, why do we have to wait so long to do the work? There's a stereotype that midlife only happens between the ages of 35 to 55, where it could happen. Okay, it's maybe not midlife, but some people can experience the most traumatic things of their lives in the youngest parts of their lives.
Yes.
But it's the healing part that destroys the rest of their life.
Yes.
And if that's not dealt with, that has a massive impact on your first 40 years. And that is something that you want to change and have research for your life and the implementation that awaits. that could really serve you in the future. Because so many times people don't turn around. You know, they don't make that call to change their lives around.
Yes, I know. And, sometimes I feel like it's not until somebody's hit rock bottom where that decision is made. You know, us as humans, we're always waiting for something to happen until we change. That's the reality. You know, somebody could have died and you're like, oh, you know, I'm going to stop smoking today. Or something really tragic needs to happen in order for us as humans to make a decision, like a
so
really
true.
Life-changing decision. And I mean, I made that decision when I had nothing. I was rock bottom. And then I made that decision. And I think, you know, for me going forward for the youth, I would want to encourage them to start making those decisions sooner, because my healing started at the age of 30, and it took me up to 8 years to really come get going. You know, it's like to really work deeply, and it's like I don't want to be this, but if I don't want to be this, I have to do the work. And the work isn't one session of this and two session and one cup of that, and no.
Dive in.
It takes a long time. Yeah.
Mish, I want to say thank you so much, and thank you for the work that you're doing out there. I always love seeing you shining your lights and doing the work that you're doing and bringing so much joy wherever you go.
Thank you.
Never change. Stay the free spirit you are. You are loved, respected, and I have so much respect for your tenacity and the endurance that you have faced over time, and who you are, and showing up as the person that you are today. It's wonderful. And in a way, all these things that you have gone through shaped you to this magnificent woman that you are. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.